also industry professionals are becoming confused by what specialty coffee really means. Isn't it good enough that a company is buying specialty coffee and also serving frappuccinos? Well, no, apparently that's not good enough. We are not good enough unless we have a barista champion on bar and we have spent over $1 million on the fit out of a cafe and we're using frozen balls to make people think like we know what the fuck we're doing. Now, all of a sudden, that's what specialty coffee is.
Exactly. I agree with part of that, but not all.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode one of a brand new series, one of five, with Bram De Hoog from Paso Paso Coffee. Bram is based in Germany, and that is only half of the story. And we will get to the other half of the story so that you can understand what exactly we mean by that. Bram, welcome to the podcast for the first time.
Thank you, Lee. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a fan of the show. I've listened to many episodes.
Thank you.
It feels great to be here myself now.
I am very excited to have this conversation. This is one of the topics that I have with discussions with people all over the world, from governments all the way down to baristas. This is a really very poignant discussion point. And the theme of this podcast, the whole series of this podcast, is the validity of specialty coffee in 2024 and beyond. Now, right up the front of this series, we want to say thank you to a fan of ours. Sorry, I'm a fan of this person and I know he's a fan of this podcast. So I misspoke, but it also is true. We want to say hello and thank you to Diego Barayona. Diego set this conversation up. Diego is the other half of this conversation, and we will tell you what that means in a second. But Diego and I have these kinds of conversations regularly. And he thought that you and I should have this conversation. He made this happen. So thank you to Diego. Bram, before we get started, why don't you tell people who you are and what you do?
Indeed, thank you. And indeed, thanks to Diego for setting it up, and we made it come together in 2 days. So this is
it's
this
a
is
very quick series.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm Bram. I'm from the Netherlands originally, and I've worked in coffee for the last 14 years, starting from washing dishes in a coffee shop and just longing to be close to an espresso machine just to touch it, just to steam the milk, just to be with coffee. And that evolved in a very long journey of curiosity about finding out more about coffee. First latte art, first cappuccino, and then widening to the world of coffee trading, cupping, buying, working with producers. And this led me all over the world. And I spend most of my time, I've lived in Costa Rica and Nicaragua, buying coffee and working with producers there. And later as well with producers in Colombia, Brazil, Ethiopia, and all over the world. And today, I am a proud co-owner of a coffee roastery named Paso Paso, farmer-owned coffee, together with 9 other amazing people who are all coffee farmers and all owners of the company as well.
And we're going to, throughout this series, unpack that a little bit more, because the reason we're having this conversation, the validity of specialty coffee in 2024 and beyond, is because the volatility that exists in coffee across the supply chain is something that we're speaking about heavily on the podcast at the moment. And it presents the proposition of, given the volatility of everything that's happening at the moment, and how valid is the concept of specialty compared to commercial grade coffee in a time where there is so much volatility. So We're going to start that conversation off by understanding what specialty coffee is. And as we move through this series, I'm going to get you to tell people a little bit more about what Paso Paso is and why it is a potential, I guess, solution that some producers and roasters may find as a decent value proposition to some of the challenges and volatility that exists in the supply chain. Because I'm certainly fascinated by what you guys are doing, and I'm a big fan of anyone who disrupts intelligently and finds solutions and just goes for solutions to problems without having to necessarily wait for everybody to catch up. You're just getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about what specialty coffee is, from your perspective, being someone who's been in the industry for so long, how do you today define specialty coffee?
Yeah, so first of all, I think this is the point of time to ask this question, right? Because I think maybe 20 years ago, it was more clear what is specialty coffee. But now it is so many shades of it, so many gray areas. So the way I like to define specialty coffee is most of all to look at what it's not, right?
Yes.
And when we ask that question, what we know, specialty coffee, it's not commodity coffee. Or we compare it against commodity coffee. So I worked on this actually for a course a while ago. And the commodity, if you just look up what that means, a commodity is a good that can be changed for a different good regardless of its origin. That's what commodity or commodity coffee means. I can get one coffee and change it for another coffee and it's still the same thing, right? And this doesn't refer to just coffee. This refers to a specific grade of coffee, because also commodity coffee is not just one type of coffee. Commodity coffee, there's different origins and different grades. For example, Brazil Fine Cup 1718 2-3 New York. That's one grade of coffee. I can talk to four suppliers, ask for that grade, and I'll get four prices probably. And I can trust that that will be the same coffee, basically the same quality, the same type. And that applies to each country, will have different grades. Now, if I look at that and I compare it to specialty, I look at, okay, so specialty should be anything but that. If I get a specialty coffee, it means that if I call a supplier, can be one farm, can be one exporter, one importer, one roastery, I shouldn't be able to get that same product from different suppliers. That's what I call specialty coffee myself. So how do I mean that? If I, let's say if you're a roaster, and you have a lineup, you have a portfolio, you say, okay, our portfolio is Ethiopia Natural, a cheap Brazil, a bold Colombian, and a washed Central American coffee. And you don't care where it comes from. It just needs to be natural Ethiopia. It just needs to be cheap Brazil. In my opinion, you are treating specialty coffee as a commodity. You don't care where it comes from. You just want a certain quality at a certain price with a certain characteristic. And that is the same as buying a New York 2-3, 1718, whatever. It's the same thing. So when I talk about specialty coffee for myself and when I try to have this conversation with people, I say you need to look for a coffee that's unique with traceable origins, documentable origins. And you cannot just take this coffee and say, okay, next year I want to sell this again, but I'm going to take something else. That should not be possible with specialty, in my opinion.
I mean, the idea of using the word specialty in anything is that it is essentially, it is its own thing. It's separate from the masses. That's the whole point of a word. It's special somehow. It is different. It is either above everything else or is trying to be above everything else. It is putting itself in its own class. When it comes to the idea of specialty coffee, my big issue with that term is, what do we mean about the coffee portion of specialty coffee?
That's another point, indeed.
Right? Do we mean the green coffee? Do we mean the roasted coffee? Do we mean the service of coffee? Do we mean the dwelling that the coffee is served in? Do we mean coffee as an industry? Do we mean coffee as a profession? What do we mean by coffee when we talk about specialty coffee?
Exactly. That's what's made it so opaque. You can look at it at so many different stages of its life cycle as well. And a lot of specialty coffees, when they are graded at origin and graded as specialty, actually within that commodity system, you can also grade something as specialty. It's just another grade within that commodity system. A lot of those coffees that, you know, if we just look at the SEA definition of 80 plus, a lot of coffee is 80 plus as well. And a lot of those coffees, they go to non-specialty roasters, such as Starbucks or Nespresso or whoever. And on the other flip side, you have specialty roasters brewing 360s, roasting on, you know, 6 kilo Lorin or whatever, doing a whole thing with a commodity grade Guatemalan coffee, for example. And at what point does the commodity coffee suddenly become a specialty, or the specialty become a commodity? And in that comparison, I would say despise the people who take a commodity coffee, just roasted light and brewed in for 16 called specialty. And I admire the people who buy specialty coffee, pay a specialty price for it, and sell it in volume, because in the end, they are having pretty good impact with that as well.
Well, there's so much to unpack there, right? Because when you look at it the other way, there are, if we look at it from the origin perspective, it's now becoming prohibitive based on labor shortages to take a varietal that, or a coffee that's being grown with the intention to turn it into specialty, can't get the labor to turn it into specialty because it requires, you know, extensive attention to picking. So they strip pick it and just throw it into commercial.
Yeah.
And so now specialty coffee is no longer specialty coffee. Well, the thing that was starting as specialty coffee somehow is not going to see the end of that journey. And we're going to see more and more of that in my opinion, having spoken to a lot of producers over the last couple of years. But there's something that I do want to also kind of hone in on with what you said.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about roasters who are buying specialty coffee, or a coffee that you would legitimately call specialty and selling it en masse, tell me what your problem is with that.
No, there's no problem with that.
Okay. I thought you were saying
that. No, that's great.
I misunderstood.
That's really good.
Right.
Yeah. No, so that there are companies out there. I mean, there's big companies out there such as Starbucks and Nespresso who have a wide and deep and diverse sourcing program. Part of that is buying specialty coffee in great volumes and paying actually really good prices for that, with that supporting either good sustainability initiatives or good farms to take good care of good people. That's part of it. Maybe that's not the whole solution program. I cannot speak to that, and I don't necessarily embrace their complete sourcing strategy. Of course, they're part of bigger conglomerates as well. But that's part of it. So that's definitely happening. There's also companies out there that are paying really good prices for, you know, let's say basic 83 point grade coffees, specialty coffees. And they're not selling it as specialty. They're making cups out of it. They're making cold brew out of it. And those people are sometimes doing amazing things, and you won't hear from them, right? Because it's not what they're there for. It's not what their mission is, not to promote themselves. And then on the other flip side, there's people who are buying those same coffees or even poorer coffees, nudging down on the price and expecting a medal for it. And that's where my personal frustration starts to boil up sometimes.
Speaking of personal frustrations, my personal frustration is the ultra specialty side of things, where people are now becoming elitist in the way that they are presenting the idea of specialty coffee, and really isolating and alienating a special group of like a customer segment, and kind of indoctrinating them into a kind of a cult that is really creating much wider problems for us as an industry, in my opinion, where the consumer is now becoming very confused by what this idea of specialty really means. And also industry professionals are becoming confused by what specialty coffee really means. Isn't it good enough that a company is buying specialty coffee and also serving frappuccinos? Well, no, apparently that's not good enough. We are not good enough unless we have a barista champion on bar and we have spent over $1 million on the fit out of a cafe and we're using frozen balls to make people think like we know what the fuck we're doing. now all of a sudden that's what specialty coffee is.
Exactly. I agree with part of that, but not all. I think indeed spending a million. I mean, there's of course the luxury experience and all that. There's like a, yeah, you can say that's part of the experience in a way. But on the green coffee side, the way I've always looked at it in my career is these ultra specialty lots. So mm-hmm. the geishas and the thermal shocks and all that. I just started a roaster that included this in my lineup as well. Wasn't part of the initial plan per se. But what I noticed is that as a roaster or a farm or mm-hmm. company, you need these poster childs.
You need the companion products, right?
Exactly. You need them to shine. You mm-hmm. need to have, you know, you need to be a cool cafe that serves V60 so people come for the latte. And that works throughout the whole chain. So, and I know a lot of producers say like, yeah, we're producing these coffees. We're not really making money on, you know, 30 kgs of geisha. But, you know, it's why people come and then they'll buy the washed Katura for their house blend. And that's where we make the money. And I think that system, I have seen that that has worked. But everybody kind of agrees that that's just, I mean, everybody kind of knows. It's like, this is fun. I love it. You love it. The nerds love it. It makes us come in the paper. Some people take it a little far by getting, you know, serving $200 cups of coffee just to get in the paper. But I've heard from some companies back in the day, such as Stumptown, for example, from the US, they would just be buying all cup of excellence coffees just to say that they have all cup of excellence coffee. Mm. And they would actually blend them away because they couldn't sell it. Mm-hmm. But it's all just marketing, right? Just buying these really expensive coffees, that's marketing budget. And that's fine if that works. But here I get to a very important part.
But does it? Does it work? That's my issue with it.
I think it works. I think it works, but I get to an important part here.
Go ahead.
For me, it's important that you buy these two different types of coffee from the same people.
Tell me why.
Because it works both ways. If you're focused on a lower grade coffee and you only buy poster childs to promote the lower grades, then you're doing a dishonesty to the people producing the lower grades and paying shit for that by promoting a company with one person's coffee and paying them very well and using another person's coffee to make the money and not paying them well, or actually, you know, dipping into commodity grades and not caring about where it comes from for your house blend. I think that's a mistake a lot of people commit.
Why do you think it's a mistake? Is it a mistake because it offends the producer or it offends the customer?
Oh, buying coffee from different people?
Yeah.
I think it offends the producer.
And who's going to care about that?
Not enough people.
Right? Like at the end of the day, the majority of people that do care aren't running businesses that are viable enough, in my opinion, and from what I've seen, mm-hmm. of the thousands and thousands of profit and loss statements that I've seen, it's the producers who are doing that that are the most likely to not survive. Sorry, not the producers, mm-hmm. the cafes. They are running on fumes every month. They have mm-hmm. people on seats in their cafes. And they mm-hmm. are telling the story and they're doing the right thing. And this is what's killing everybody is if I aspire mm-hmm. to be that, I'm not going to survive. But if I do this other thing, then I'm screwing the supply chain. Lee, tell me what we're meant to do.
Interesting take. And it's not easy indeed, but that's where for me, the integrity part comes in. And the business savviness, right? If that's your business model, everybody's free to make their own decisions. It's my opinion mm-hmm. that's not what I want to do. And it's not what I think,
especially coffee, sleep at that's night, not right? the image.
Exactly. And that's also not what they're telling the people, right? They're telling them like, hey, look, we have this poster, this amazing producer with this amazing coffee. And then people are like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Let's buy a cappuccino because I really like this cafe. And then in their cappuccino, there's a completely untraceable coffee. No idea if it's covering cost of production. No idea if the producers are actually benefiting from that. But you're selling an image and you're selling a different product. You might have the product that you're selling as well, that you're promoting as well, but it's not what you're actually making money off. And of course, that house blend component from a traceable farm is going to be much more expensive. And it's worth it, in my opinion, but that's what 90% of your business is going to be. So if 90% of your business is based on a lie, I wouldn't feel too good.
Brian, when was the last time a consumer asked you how much, if this coffee was above the cost of production?
Never.
Neither me either. Mm-hmm. And that's fundamentally, I think, what the problem with specialty is. If we are going to be specialty, we should be, at the very least, doing everything specialty. We should be paying, we should mm-hmm. know what the fucking cost of production is when we're buying a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I had a conversation with a very, very intelligent guy in the supply chain today, and we are trying to find something to be hopeful about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't remember any time where the consumer was told about the idea of cost of production, nor do I know a roaster that wasn't a green buyer beforehand mm-hmm. that knew how to ask a producer what the cost of production was.
Yeah, it's a good point you raised there. And indeed, consumers don't ask about it. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they don't have the bandwidth. But then the question I always like to come back with the roaster is like, okay, maybe the consumer doesn't care, but do you care? Like, you're the business owner. You can take decisions for the consumers, and they don't mm-hmm. have to know about them, but it's about doing the right thing. And I think it's very easy to hide behind, yeah, but the consumer doesn't want it. The consumer doesn't want to pay this. But then if you look at the cost of ingredients of a cup of coffee, how much is the roasted coffee or the green coffee if your roaster retailer or coffee shop is, it's minimal.
Totally.
And of course, it's not easy to run a business and say, oh, yeah, I'm just going to increase costs because it's fun. And there are very little businesses that do that, unfortunately. And allow me to stray off the path a little bit here or not. You can interrupt me. I think the idea of specialty is, or a lot of people love to shout off the rooftops about specialty coffee and how they're paying 3 times fair trade or 4 times whatever. But if you're getting a product that's worth that, you're just engaging in a business transaction, right? And that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's great that you're paying a lot of money for good coffee, but that's not voluntarily paying more than what it's worth. If you're voluntarily paying more than what the coffee is worth, you get an offer from a producer and say, hey, that's great, but I actually cupped it or tried it and I think you should be paid $5 instead of $4 for this. And then you can say, well, you know, I'm really voluntarily going out there and enabling people through paying more for the coffee. But if you're just paying for what it's worth, I don't think you have a claim to saying you're paying more. Then you're just paying what it's worth.
And there's someone I want to shout out that I know mm-hmm. for a fact does this. And I want to shout out Tim Wendelboe.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Wendelboe is absolutely a cafe owner that pays more than what most producers ask him for. And mm-hmm. I have no stakes in Tim Wendelboe's business, folks. It's not a Tim has been on the podcast, yes, but I know from producers who work with Tim that this is Tim's natural way of doing things. Other people, there's another company that does that, and that is Raw Coffee here in Dubai.
Kim, I don't know them.
Kim Thompson mm-hmm. and Matt Toogood, they do that as well. If they find a coffee that they know that they should be paying more for it than what the producer has asked them for, they will do the same thing. So there are cafe owners that are doing this, but I want to be really clear on something, folks. Mm-hmm. These are cafe owners that know their numbers. They know how to read a profit yep. and loss statement.
Mm-hmm.
They know what their profit margins are, and therefore they know where they can afford to make more money. So
I'll give you a little anecdote. I used to work for a very small exporting company first. And I didn't know anything about price. Didn't know anything mm-hmm. about coffee. And it was really small. I was doing like 10 containers, which is small for an exporting company, working with a couple of great roasters, at a cafe coffee roasters from South Korea, Campus Coffee in Australia, Panther Coffee in the US, Coffee Labs in New York. And I started my career working with these kind of companies. They were just doing amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working later for another company. And then or I got prices from other exporters as well. And I was just shocked. They were like a dollar less for the same coffee, for the same quality of coffee. And I was like, wow, these people are really, they could just go to the mill next door, literally next door, and pay it a dollar less per pound. But they choose not to. Of course, the exporting company put a lot of love in it. There's a great shelf life, et cetera, et cetera. There were some perks, but not perks worth a dollar more. So there are definitely companies out there, and I built my vision, my idea, my illusion of the specialty coffee company on this story. When I was a barista, when I worked for a roaster, when I was working at this exporting company, when I was a coffee buyer, I continued with this vision. But that vision then slowly, I think the last 3 years, crumbled, unfortunately. Mm.
That sets us up really quite well for the next episode, which is the status quo of the coffee supply chain. So it really does set us up very, very well for that. So join us in the next episode, folks. You know, I promise you this is going to be one of those series where you are going to go back to your espresso machine or back to your office, and you're going to be thinking about a lot of the stuff that we talk about in this series because, there's a lot to be considered this year. So peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.